start of Moscow's special military operation in Ukraine. Analysts believe that Western powers are using strong arm tactics to counter Russia in Africa.
It appears that Russia is succeeding, and I think that has more to do with the insistence of the United States and the Western countries, but particularly the United States, of using like strong arm tactics. And that's traditionally what it does. That's also what characterizes neo-colonialism, using sanctions, using the international monetary, and the sanctions are actually exercised through the financial institutions. A lot of them are exercised also by the IMF and the World Bank and whatnot. And so they insist on not respecting the sovereignty of African countries. African countries should be able to have their own relationships with whoever they so choose, but the U.S. wants to dictate that. And so when Sergei Lavrov comes, and they actually are coming after the on the heels pretty much in December of December, the U.S. Africa's leaders summit that happened in Washington, D.C. in December did not have the expected results that the U.S. wanted. Them trying to, kind of court African leaders to take their sides in the world in this global competition for things. So the U.S. is becoming more overt in their strong arm policy.
Addressing the media after meeting his Eritrean counterpart Osman Saleh in February, Lavrov said Russia favors the principle of African solutions to African problems.
We had a detailed discussion of the African agenda. We have pointed out the need to normalize the situation in the conflict hotspots of Africa. We paid special attention to the situation in the African Horn region. We, together with our Eritrean friends, believe that in order to overcome the regional crisis, we require the promotion of a comprehensive approach through coordinated actions of the African states themselves, with the support from the international community. We have confirmed that Russia, including in its status as a permanent member of the UN Security Council, will continue making its contribution to strengthening security and stability in the African continent, based upon the well-known principle, African solutions for African problems. We shall not impose any external solutions to the Africans, and we see numerous attempts of doing that.
Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov also said that Western media outlets have been distorting facts while covering his tour across sub-Saharan Africa. Now, what's your take on this statement by Lavrov?
Well, they have to distort facts. The U.S., I think the U.S. and the leadership, the ruling class of the United States, because it's not regular people, believe their own perceptions about the world. This comes from a colonial mindset. But also at the same time, they have to sidestep the hypocrisy that they practice, the double standards they practice. One of the things, and I can remember this one distortion of facts, which is really an odd one, is to say, Russia and Lavrov are only visiting countries where there's rich mineral resources in Africa. This doesn't really make any sense to anyone who understands Africa. Every place in Africa is rich in mineral resources. It's not really a place you can go that you're not going to be able to, to have some go to some place that doesn't have rich mineral resources.
South African Defense and Military Veterans Minister Thandi Medise has hit out against the United States for trying to bully African countries from doing business with Russia. Medise said the Countering Malign Russian Activities in Africa Act, which seeks to sanction any African businesses or people doing business with Russia, should be rejected by African countries. More African countries are expected to defy the West.
I think we will see more, and we have seen more of the West, and a lot of it was when I mentioned earlier, the U.S. U.S.-Africa Leaders Summit, where they invited a lot of these leaders to Washington, D.C. Some of those deliberations, the African country were talking about how the U.S. is not really respecting the self-determination. I don't know if they use the word self-determination, but the rights of African countries to do business how they see fit. And that it was much along the lines of strong-arming and what we call, in the Black Lives Matter piece, we refer to it as gangsterism because that's what it is. But you're seeing a lot of what the African countries are more likely to defy it because the other other forces, China, Russia, even to whoever you can name, other forces beside the U.S. and besides the Western NATO countries, and people can talk about what their interests or what their real interests are or not, but they come with a different, they come differently. Their bilateral relationships, their agreements. The U.S. is a gangster, and then NATO, they're gangster countries. They, and we've referred to that meaning they impose their will.
A tweet by the German Foreign Ministry in which it used a leopard emoji in referring to the Russian Foreign Minister's visit to Africa has created uproar in Africa after it appeared offensive to some. Now, can such a tweet be indicative of Germany's colonial stereotypical view on Africa?
It certainly can be indicative of it. I don't know what was in their mind. I mean, Germany and the Western countries, they come out of a legacy of colonization and a dehumanization of Africa. They do not respect African, you know, African culture, African anything. And they even can't even take responsibility for the underdeveloped state that Africa is in terms of where there's poverty and these kind of things. They don't take responsibility for that. And it's directly at the shoulders of Europe and the U.S., neocolonialism and former tradition, you know, former colonialism or formal colonialism, as described by, if we could look at like the seminal work of scholars like Walter Rodney and the work, the book of How Europe Underdeveloped Africa, and even the works of like Kwame Nkrumah talking about neocolonialism and outlining the effects of neocolonialism.
South African Foreign Minister Naledi Pandor defended the decision during a joint media briefing alongside her visiting Russian counterpart, Sergei Lavrov, who is in the country for bilateral talks.
All countries conduct military exercises with friends worldwide. So there should be no compulsion on any country that it should conduct them with any other partner. It's part of a natural course of relations between countries. So I think we need to explain this to the public.
Now, what message is this military drill sending to Western countries?
These joint military operations in the U.S. has embarked on this, you know, this militarization of the continent through the U.S. Africa Command, AFRICOM. It's since 2008, maybe starting in 2007, where it has all of this, you know, military bases around, and the rhetoric around rhetoric or even its maneuvers around countering China, and then the legislation countering Russia. This sends the message to the West, these new developments with the naval drills, is that we don't consider you the hegemon anymore, or even the right to be the hegemon, and that we're not going to take sides also in the war between these forces.
Very well put there. Africa is reasserting its independence, and the joint naval drills by the South African Navy with Russia and China are a pointer to these new realignment of power in Africa. We now take a short break before our next topic on the CFA franc.
CFA franc, French colonial tax in Africa. You're listening to Africa Today. Africa Today is an analytical weekly review of political, economic, and social events in Africa, the world's second largest continent. The series is broadcast every week on Saturdays and Sundays by IRIB English Radio.
We'll be right back. The CFA, which stood for French Colonies in Africa in 1945, now stands for Africa Financial Community. It is used in 14 African countries with a combined population of about 150 million and $235 billion USD of gross domestic product.
The CFA franc limits monetary sovereignty. France guarantees the value of the CFA franc, and in return, the countries that use it are required to at least 50% of their foreign exchange reserves with the French Treasury. Because the exchange rate between the CFA franc and euro is fixed, the central banks of the two CFA franc zones need to follow the monetary policies of the European Central Bank in order to maintain the peg. In other words, the European Central Bank effectively sets interest rates for countries that use the CFA franc.
The CFA franc is seen as a clear example of how France pursues a deliberate policy of continuing to plunder the countries it once colonized. Dr. Arikana Chihombori-Kwao, a former African Union ambassador to the U.S., weighs in here on how the CFA franc has disadvantaged African countries.
France is taking out of Africa, Francophone Africa, over $500 billion. Over $500 billion. We, the Africans, the poor countries, we are giving France over $500 billion a year. Year in, year out. And no one is talking about it. The latest figures are saying for every $14 billion that France takes out of Africa, by the time they finish investing it, they are realizing upwards of $300 billion for every $14 billion. So in actuality, France is taking out of Africa trillions of dollars year in, year out.
Now, for more on this continued exploitation of Africa by France, we have contacted Mustafa Traore, an academic and political commentator. Thanks for your time today. Now, the CFA franc is seen as a vestige of French colonialism in Africa and has been referred by many as a sort of colonial tax on African countries. So why is this currency still being used in parts of Central and Western Africa?
It is true that it is a colonial currency. The reason why it is still used, it is because it is in the interest of France. We know that each time you had an African leader willing to change the situation to go out of the France FA, this politician was eliminated. So we understand that the mechanism of the France FA was inherited from the time of the Nazi regime. It is the Nazi regime who first used it against the French government, against the French nation. And then after the Second World War, the French used the same system, the system that was used by the Nazi, against the Africans.
Former Burkina Faso president Thomas Sankara opposed the CFA system because he believed that it was part of the economic stagnation that country endured. CFA franc is indeed the source of economic backwardness of Western and Central African countries, especially considering the fact that those countries using this currency are some of the poorest in the world.
Now, many analysts believe that the CFA franc was meant to control the cost of access to raw materials from the colonies and enable Paris to maintain its grip on the economies of these African countries. Now, can you elaborate further on some of the advantages France gets in ensuring African countries continue using the CFA franc?
Yeah, they can buy, they decide. They decide on what on the prices, which means that if something is too expensive, you can say, okay, I'm going to devaluate your currency, and now this is what your money is worth. So, and the thing is that the African currency is printed in France. Can you imagine? So it is printed in France. So, which means that this is what I sometimes explain to some of my students, because I teach English economics, and I tell to my students that there's nothing that the French government cannot buy in these countries, because they have the printing machine. Once you have the printing machine, nothing exists on earth in these countries that the French government cannot buy.
French President Macron is trying to influence the renaming of the CFA franc to ECO after the Economic Community of West African States, ECOWAS, decided that a new regional currency will take effect in 2027. Some ECOWAS members not using CFA franc have rejected French influence in the transition to a new currency. France is apparently sabotaging a strong and independent common African currency in West and Central Africa.
What is very surprising here is the fact that France wants to have its word on it. Okay, we are dealing with African countries. It's their currency. So it's not to the French president to say how they are going to name the new currency and what they are going to do. Okay, if the African decides, if the Africans decide to change the currency, to change the system, they are free to do it. But France wants to be part of it. And what the Africans are saying, that they do not want you to be part of it. And the first people, or the first countries to oppose the participation of France in that new currency, are the English-speaking countries, okay? Those who are not using the franc CFA. So that's very important. So we know that, and it's not me saying it, it was former President Jacques Chirac who once said it, without some African countries, France is nothing.
Demonstrators take to the streets regularly in several French-speaking African cities to reject the CFA currency, saying it prevents development and is keeping countries in poverty.
We must do all it takes to ensure that the CFA franc is abolished forever.
With the growing unpopularity of France in Africa and the younger generation's rejection of its presence, are we going to see more demands for the dumping of the CFA franc?
Yes, I think so. I think, yeah, this is what is very likely to happen. Many countries are trying to set free from, let's say, the chains of France. We saw it in Mali, in Burkina Faso, and Guinea. And I'm sure that is good. We will have more countries trying to reject the French influence. And they do it first militarily, and the next step is the currency. So for sure, that is the next step.
Well, there you have it. Many African countries are going to free themselves from the shackles of French neocolonialism. I'd like to thank our guest, Mustafa Traore, for his insight today. That brings us to the end of this week's edition of Africa Today. It's been great having you. Goodbye for now.
Option for today and a better tomorrow. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio. Limelight.
efforts are underway around the world to topple the hegemony of dollar. The Russian president has recently said Moscow will cooperate with its partners to develop a safe system for international settlements. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. The website of RT wrote in this regard, the US and other Western currencies will inevitably lose their leading position in global cross-border transactions, Russian President Vladimir Putin has said recently. Delivering his annual address to the Federal Assembly, the head of state said that Moscow would cooperate with its allies to build a secure system of international settlements that are not dependent on the dollar or the euro. According to Putin, the current policies of Western states are causing the US dollar and the euro to lose their universality in international payments. He explained that Russia's former Western partners are forcing Moscow to cut settlements in dollars and other Western currencies. In December, Putin stated that the share of the ruble transactions in Russia's foreign trade had doubled since the beginning of 2022 and now accounted for one-third of the country's settlements. He projected that the use of national currencies in place of the US dollar and the euro in trade with Russia's international partners would continue to grow. The process of de-dollarizing the Russian economy started back in 2014, when Western nations introduced the initial sanctions against Moscow over Crimea's reunification with Russia, which was formerly part of Ukraine. Sanctions imposed since the start of the military operation in Ukraine have sped up the process, particularly after over $300 billion in Russian foreign exchange reserves and other assets were frozen by the US and its allies. Al-Mayadin English, meanwhile, wrote, Russia and Egypt consultations for de-dollarization is underway. Consultations on the transition to national currencies as a means of exchange between Egypt and Russia are underway, according to Russian ambassador to Egypt, Georgi Borisenko. The purpose of these talks is to move away from the dollar and thus will help to avoid the arbitrariness on the part of Western countries that use their own currencies for geopolitical purposes. According to the ambassador, from the spring of 2022, intensive consultations have been ongoing regarding the transition to national currencies in settlements in mutual trade. Borisenko also lauded Egypt for resisting Western pressure and continuing to expand its relations with Russia. Despite all these pressures, Egypt remains faithful to the traditions of friendship between our countries laid down during the presidency of Gamal Abdel Nasser and continues to actively interact with Russia in the economic, cultural spheres and various international political platforms, Borisenko said in an interview with Sputnik. As the world moves away from the US dollar as a world reserve asset, dollars will be dumped globally, causing a tsunami of inflation in the United States as the currency returns to American shores. Interest rates will rise accordingly, followed by a collapse in asset prices, which would be used to usher in central bank digital currencies and the Great Reset. This dire scenario is the forecast of Andy
As Katzman, president and owner of Miles Franklin and an expert on monetary and economic history, Skidman, who has 3 decades of experience in the precious metal sector, said that BRICS, including Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa coalition, could lead the charge to develop their own reserve currency, which would compete against the US dollar. He said, "The BRICS are, I think, coalescing against the dollar, the perceived hypocrisy and hegemony of the dollar. We've already been told that the BRICS currency would be pegged to gold or to commodities, the assumption being that gold is one of the commodities." The BRICS are meeting in Durban, South Africa in August, and one of their agenda items is the development of an alternative to the US dollar. Skidman told Michelle McCurry, lead anchor and editor-in-chief at Kitco News, that the dollar's weaponization during the Russia-Ukraine conflict has hastened the move to dump dollar. He suggested that the Western sanctions on Russia, as well as expelling Russia from the SWIFT payment system, has had a chilling effect, deterring other nations from using the dollar. Skidman observed, since the weaponization of the dollar in 2022, the de-dollarization seems to be spinning much, much faster.
Once every 100,000 years, gold is created from the collision of neutron stars. Mysterious gold instantly melted into humanity's desire, contained the magic which enabled civilizations to flourish and fueled the desire that made people venture across oceans. But why do we lust after gold? And does humanity own gold, or does gold own humanity? I'm Daniel Arya, and this is Aperture. For centuries, gold was the economic index which dominated the world before it lost to the dollar. But the 2008 financial meltdown has brought gold back from oblivion. Gold is now dominating the world once again, but why is it gold again? In 2008, gold woke up from its deep, dark sleep. As the dollar became unstable during the U.S. financial crisis, people rushed to gold. And in August of 2011, the twisted destiny recurred. The new gold rush started again. Pursuit has begun once again, and stay with us as we take a look into the history of gold from its glittering past to its sudden return.
Gold.
That is gold.
King eye.
King or gold.
Gold.
With gold.
Gold.
Il oro.
The oro.
Oro.
Into gold.
Sold gold.
Gold.
Gold price.
Gold mines.
Gold is undervalued.
Currency which reflects human instincts is very much alive. Money gained humanity's passionate desire since its creation. Money was at the center of wars and economies. its origin can be traced back to Mesopotamia. Thousands of years ago, Sumerians were the first ever to develop trade. Since then, many types of currency have appeared in history. Trading goods for goods appeared first. Grains, essential for everyone, were used as currency in many areas. As time passed, smaller objects were used for trading to facilitate easier transportation and exchange. Various metals became the new currency, as they were easily transportable and did not rot. But not all metals were permanently stable. In the end, gold, whose value was accepted consistently as a stable metal, became the best currency. Gold, which is evaluated by its weight and purity, has no exchange rate or nationality. Due to its high value, large trades were made possible with just small amounts of gold. It was the best currency that was accepted everywhere. In 700 BC, the Kingdom of Lydia, which ruled Turkey, became the birthplace of the best invention in the history of currency. The capital of the kingdom was Sardis. It was the hub of the East and West, and as trading became important, the need for currency grew. Lydia dominated Asia Minor. It expanded its boundaries as the ancient empire, securing the trade route linking an area of over 2,700 kilometers. Lydia invented the world's first gold coins, using their abundant resources of gold, and built an affluent kingdom.
And this started with King Croesus of Lydia, which is a very famous name. And he really produced the first gold coins and used it particularly to pay soldiers and military people.
In the early 7th century BC, Lydians minted the world's first coins. Gold coins, which feature a lion's head, the symbol of Lydia, became the kingdom's representative export goods. As the world's first gold coins and the world's first empire currency, Lydia's coins spread through Asia Minor and Greece. They became a necessity for trade in the Mediterranean. Goods, art, people, and knowledge gathered in Lydia, and humanity's first retail businesses began. With a single shiny gold coin, people were able to buy horses or delicious food. It also reduced shopping time. A new world had opened up for humanity. But if the Lydians were the first to invent coins, the Greeks were the first to turn coin making into an art form. Each city imprinted its own unique symbols. They were the symbols of national strength. Greek coins circulated the Mediterranean through marine commerce. Gold coins brought revolutionary developments in commerce and became the foundation of civilizations. Education also developed quickly along with the coins. Five 500 years after the birth of gold coins, the currency revolution moved to Rome. Coins featuring the emperor's face, as well as other royalty, were widely used among laymen. As the territory of the Roman Empire expanded, the amount of gold attained through looting and mining grew exponentially. Consequently, the Romans issued more gold coins, and these coins strengthened the empire. Gold coins were what built the Roman Empire. In 395 AD, after the Roman Empire divided into two, Western Rome collapsed within the next 100 years. However, the surviving Eastern Rome continued to write history for another 1,000 years. Constantine the Great moved Rome's capital to Byzantium and founded the Byzantine Empire. Constantine the Great, who reunited Rome, declared freedom from religion and chose Sunday as a day of rest. He also issued a new gold coin called solidus. This is bezant, the best currency. The bezant, with a 98% purity, weighed 4.5 grams. The bezant was the basic currency of the Middle Ages that everyone could trust and use. It was the longest surviving currency in history.
Really ran from about 500. Well, really 300 AD, but 500 AD in Istanbul itself, and lasted for almost 1,000 years, really with the weight and the purity of it unchanged. There were some years when it was a problem, but it did last almost for 1,000 years, the Byzantine solidus. It was a thousand year coin, if you like.
The bezant was the revenue source to maintain a large army and the means of controlling the empire. That is why the bezant is called the dollar of the Middle Ages. The dollar of the Middle Ages surpasses today's dollar in terms of stability and value. While today's dollar faced a crisis within 100 years, the bezant survived for 1,000 years. The bezant was the partner that supported the kingdom for 1,000 years. The value of gold transcends time and space and gives faith to people. But there was a critical weakness even to gold, the best currency. there is a limit to the production of gold. And there are three ways to overcome the limit. One was to endure the lack of currency, and the other was to bring in gold from other regions through trade and loot. The last method was currency degradation, by making more coins with the same amount of gold. People began to deceive others by making new coins using clipped edges of existing coins.
And up until 1696, coins were struck onto a rough blank. So you used to be able to, if you were a very unscrupulous silversmith, you could clip the edges and get free silver. And so there were many laws that were passed to try and stop this. And in 1696, what they did was that they made sure that all the coins were circular with a milled edge. So that stopped the practice of coin clipping.
This is the origin of how the coin edges look today. Clipping of coin edges brought many problems. The value of currency fell, and prices began to inflate. New coins had to be issued to win people's trust. Sir Isaac Newton stepped up to solve all these problems.
And one of his big responsibilities was to prevent forgery. So one of the ways he did that was by making sure that all the coins had a milled edge around them, because if the edge is milled with little grooves, it's impossible to clip off a little bit of the coin.
The grooves on the coins that Newton made are used on today's coins as well. The grooves mark the human greed for gold. Gold, however, was never used as the main currency in the East. As the value of gold developed the currency system in the West, brass coins backed by the government played a similar role in the East. Whether it be gold or a brass coin, if the receiver had trust in it, that was enough. People had faith in the government. The first coins in the East were made during the Jin Dynasty. They believed the sky was round and the land was square. So they made a round coin with a square hole in the middle. This shape became the basic shape of Eastern coins for 2,000 years. The trust of currency gave birth to the world's first paper money in China. Gyoza, issued in Buxong in 1023, was the first paper money. When Emperor Kublai Khan of the Yuan Dynasty mass-produced bozhou and circulated them through Eurasia, the era of paper currency began. Paper money was made of paper, but it ceased to be just ordinary paper. Kublai Khan is described as an alchemist in the travels of Marco Polo. Paper currency was like magic to the Westerners who were using gold coins. During the Yuan Dynasty, the government forcefully retained gold, silver, and copper, and with its guarantee, paper money was issued. With the circulation of paper money, less money was spent on producing coins, which led to a better financial status of the government, and thus led to a more active commerce. Replacing the gold with paper money opened up a new golden era in the East. At the end of the 15th century, gold had cast a spell on people and made them cross the oceans, risking their lives. But the lives of Europeans were also shaken up by gold. At the time, the population which had been devastated by the plague was bouncing back. Price of commodities was also increasing. Moreover, as gold and silver from the New World poured into Europe, prices soared uncontrollably. The price revolution of the 16th century began. Treasure from the New World created a large gap between the rich and the poor.
And this is at a time when that is much more than a week's earnings in the late, it's more like 2 weeks' earnings. So it is a lot of time to earn the smallest coin. And therefore people do not have, ordinary people do not have gold coins. It is something for the rich to have.
Prices quadrupled and sextupled. First, landowners who received a consistent amount of rent went bankrupt. Farmers who didn't have money to rent land became wage laborers. On the other hand, the royal families and noblemen enjoyed an unprecedented extravagance. Gold instantly spread throughout European countries, and in its wake, only collapsed industries and financial crisis remained. Such was the curse of gold. The price revolution continued on for over 100 years without any resolution. It was the longest inflation in history. When commerce expanded and capitalism developed, a barter economy emerged. A system of an exchange of promissory notes for foreign currency began. 48 types of gold coins used in Europe in the 16th century were all exchangeable. Thus, financial innovation was propelled by the power of gold. In the early 19th century, gold faced a new era. Money was dependent upon the value of gold. A system of gold and money exchange emerged. Since then, history repeatedly introduced and discarded the gold standard. In 1819, England pegged the value of pounds to gold and circulated paper money that could be exchanged for gold at any time. By 1870, most countries had adopted the gold standard, and the pound, which could be exchanged for gold, became the key currency around the world.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is the part of the speech delivered by the leader of the Islamic Revolution during a meeting with a number of elegists, eulogists, and religious poets in the Imam Khomeini Husseiniya on January 12, 2023. The meeting took place one day before the anniversary of the birth of Lady Fatima Zahra Salamullah Aliyah. We must not underestimate the enemy. The enemy exists. The day when you become so strong that the enemy loses all hope will be the day when you can feel tranquil and find peace of mind. We must work to make ourselves stronger. My emphasis, repeating and insisting that the country should become strong is because of this. We must make the enemy lose hope. Thank God. With the spirituality, with God's help, and with His guidance, the nation is serving the revolution. It is behind the revolution, and the government and the people are helping. We have good elements. We have very productive, useful institutions. The effects of revolution are becoming more apparent outside the country's borders every day as well.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
Another point that I wanted to mention, which I have just remembered, is about combining elegies with anthems. This has recently become a common practice, and this is very good. Some great songs have been sung. For example, the song Salam Farmande was a good song. You saw how this song was translated and sung again in other places. In some countries, of course, this was not reported in the news. But I was informed about this. They repeated the same thing that the children had sung here. They repeated this song in their countries in the original Farsi language, even though they did not know Farsi. They sung the original version. These are factors that can aid in increasing the authority of the country. Of course, when you enter this field, and all of you are thankfully active in this field, a number of people will show their admiration, but some will become your enemies. The arrogant powers will become your enemy, and the agents of the arrogant powers will become your enemy. They will disrupt your work and act against you. Well, let them. This enmity is something that will always be there. That which will prove what you're made of and will show your final outcome is your perseverance, steadfastness, and trust in God. It is said in a poem, my rivals seek support from each other after killing me. But, oh, heartwarming love, I seek support from you. Well, it is noon or prayer time now. God willing, Allah will help all of you to be successful. I will definitely pray for all of you. Please pray for me as well. Oh Lord, by Muhammad and the progeny of Muhammad, peace be upon him, I ask you to bestow your blessings on all of us and on this nation and by the blessed name of Lady Fatima Zahra Salamullah Aliyah. May God's greetings, mercy and blessings be upon you. Assalamu alaikum.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done. From all the ways that were wrong and
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Poreza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
The U.S. wasted no time scrambling jets in response to North Korea's recent long-range missile launch, deploying strategic assets capable of carrying nuclear bombs with South Korean fighter aircraft. At the United Nations, the U.S. placed responsibility for the tension on North Korea.
We echo the Council's consistent demand that the DPRK comply with its obligations under numerous UN Security Council resolutions, abandon its weapons of mass destruction and ballistic missile program in a complete, verifiable, and irreversible manner, and engage constructively in diplomacy.
North Korea has steadily developed a nuclear deterrent in the face of expanding U.S. militarization of South Korea. China calls for dialogue.
On the Korean Peninsula issue, we adhere to pursuing in parallel the establishment of a peace mechanism and the denuclearization process of the peninsula, and address the legitimate concerns of all parties in a balanced manner, and maintain peace and stability on the Korean Peninsula.
The U.S. has agreed to frequently deploy nuclear-capable weapons to the region at South Korea's request. The U.S. and South Korea seem to have agreed to raise the tension on the Korean Peninsula in an attempt to somehow force North Korea into negotiations on arms control or denuclearization. This reverses the policy of the previous South Korean government that brought about a reduction in tension through engagement and dialogue. Local analysts warn of potential conflict.
When North Korea does something, the South Korea-U.S. alliance reacts. And if the South Korea-U.S. alliance does something, North Korea reacts. And this vicious cycle continues. The stronger the deployment of U.S. strategic assets, the more fragile the peace on the Korean Peninsula, and the faster the arms race. And this risks creating a security dilemma and, more seriously, a war crisis.
More regional tension seems inevitable as South Korea seeks to celebrate the 70th anniversary of its alliance with the U.S. with ever larger war games. Frank Smith, Seoul.
Tensions are flaring up again across the Palestinian territories as the Israeli regime has intensified its bloody crackdown there. After a day of mayhem and bloodshed in the West Bank by the regime's forces, Israeli warplanes rained down missiles on the besieged Gaza Strip, prompting Palestinians to hit back with rockets.
Wednesday's Israeli raid on West Bank was the deadliest in about two decades. Nearly a dozen people were killed and scores more were injured after the regime's forces, backed by armored vehicles, surrounded the city of Nablus and opened fire on the people, including teenagers and elderly. Thousands of Palestinians gathered to mourn the death of their loved ones. Nablus and the nearby city of Jenin have repeatedly come under Israeli attacks over the last couple of months. Palestinians find themselves helpless in front of the occupying regime and its ruthless agenda.
What is happening on the ground is organized state terrorism, which the Israeli occupation government is solely responsible for.